This recording accompanies the Language B Higher Level Examination, Paper 2, Listening Comprehension for English, November 2022.
Cet enregistrement accompagne l'examen de Langue B, Niveau Supérieur, Épreuve 2, Compréhension Orale d'Anglais, novembre 2022.
Esta grabación acompaña el examen de lengua B, nivel superior, prueba 2, comprensión auditiva, de inglés, noviembre 2022.
The start and end of each audio text will be indicated by this sound.
Le début et la fin de chaque texte audio seront indiqués par ce son.
El inicio y el final de cada texto de audio se indicarán con este sonido.
The end of the examination will be indicated by this sound.
La fin de l'examen sera indiquée par ce son.
El final del examen se indicará con este sonido.
Text A. You now have 4 minutes to read the questions.
You are going to hear a podcast episode about fake news on social media.
Never in human history has information traveled as fast as it does today, thanks to social media. It's common sense that some info that we get on these sites is just untruthful. In other words, fake news. Everyone should by now be alert to it then, right? Less than what you might think. Fake news is currently circulated a worrying 6 times faster than the truth. The combat against it can't wait any longer. In this week's episode, let's look at what we can do about fake news. It should come as no surprise that the most common fake news category is political news. Other popular topics are misleading investment tips, followed by rumors about pop stars, and exaggerated videos of natural disasters. While bots are known to play a key role in the spread of false stories, some researchers claim that, in fact, humans are the main culprits. Interestingly, the respondents claimed that they wouldn't have reposted the untruthful content if they'd known that it was fake. Many just forgot to fact-check first. To make things worse, while a lot of the fake content can be detected by the algorithms of social media, most of it remains intact because users can argue that such content is just their personal opinion, and removing it is a violation of their freedom of speech. In other words, although social media platforms do make an effort, their hands are tied too. So, what's the big deal? Fake news is created by dishonest people mostly to make money. I mean, they make profits through ads. It could cause harmful impacts on society, though. For example, a misleading hashtag often uses a good cause as a disguise and gains popularity fast. At the same time, it can be easily manipulated to incite hate towards a certain social group. The good news is, actions are taken by mainstream platforms. Currently, paid advertising must be labeled as such, and users have to declare any state-sponsored content. In the next phase, political ads will also be included in order to indicate potentially biased information. By 2024, all edited media will be flagged so that we can be better informed when viewing user-generated content. As users, if you've spotted something suspicious, try to find the author bio. If it doesn't exist, proceed with caution. Also, check the publication date. Sometimes a piece of content isn't fake. It just contains dated info. As a rule of thumb, think twice before hitting the share button.
You now have 2 minutes before you hear the recording for a second and final time.
Never in human history has information traveled as fast as it does today, thanks to social media. It's common sense that some info that we get on these sites is just untruthful. In other words, fake news. Everyone should by now be alert to it then, right? Less than what you might think. Fake news is currently circulated a worrying 6 times faster than the truth. The combat against it can't wait any longer. In this week's episode, let's look at what we can do about fake news. It should come as no surprise that the most common fake news category is political news. Other popular topics are misleading investment tips, followed by rumors about pop stars and exaggerated videos of natural disasters. While bots are known to play a key role in the spread of false stories, some researchers claim that, in fact, humans are the main culprits. Interestingly, the respondents claimed that they wouldn't have reposted the untruthful content if they'd known that it was fake. Many just forgot to fact-check first. To make things worse, while a lot of the fake content can be detected by the algorithms of social media, most of it remains intact because users can argue that such content is just their personal opinion, and removing it is a violation of their freedom of speech. In other words, although social media platforms do make an effort, their hands are tied too. So, what's the big deal? Fake news is created by dishonest people mostly to make money. I mean, they make profits through ads. It could cause harmful impacts on society, though. For example, a misleading hashtag often uses a good cause as a disguise and gains popularity fast. At the same time, it can be easily manipulated to incite hate towards a certain social group. The good news is, actions are taken by mainstream platforms. Currently, paid advertising must be labeled as such, and users have to declare any state-sponsored content. In the next phase, political ads will also be included in order to indicate potentially biased information. By 2024, all edited media will be flagged so that we can be better informed when viewing user-generated content. As users, if you've spotted something suspicious, try to find the author bio. If it doesn't exist, proceed with caution. Also, check the publication date. Sometimes a piece of content isn't fake. It just contains dated info. As a rule of thumb, think twice before hitting the share button.
You now have 2 minutes, 30 seconds to finish answering the questions. Text B. You now have 4 minutes to read the questions.
You are going to hear a conversation between two friends, John and Michelle, about their neighborhood in the city.
Hey, Michelle, have you heard? The metro is finally coming here.
Yes, I look forward to it. The public transit needs some serious improvement. I mean, look around us, John. The nearest train station we have is a 30-minute walk from here. And to go to downtown, we can only take the bus. But we have to change lines twice. The metro will definitely make things easier. It'd be wonderful if they could bring in some bike paths, too. But that might be wishful thinking.
I'm sure the city is going to revitalize the area. Look at all the big development projects around. And quite a few trendy restaurants and cafes have opened. It's going to look quite different in a few years.
I just hope the cost of living won't go up too much, though. I heard the rent went up by 13% on average in another up-and-coming neighborhood in the city.
I wouldn't mind paying a bit more to live in a nicer area, to be honest.
It works for you because you have a decent job. But lots of neighborhoods that get revitalized are traditionally where low-income communities are, especially minority groups. The rent spike will mean these less privileged groups will have to move.
True, and that's a shame. They are really the soul of the neighborhood and define the vibe here. I'll be sad to see these folks go and lose the cultural diversity here.
Well, you know what? I just read that Fortune Diner on Bank Street is closing down next month.
What? It's such a hangout spot for locals, though. I always grab a quick coffee there in the morning when I'm in a rush.
Yeah, apparently the owner sold the space to a franchise cafe. Speaking of coffee, I think ours is ready. So yes, they are tearing down the diner along with a few other old buildings. Quite disappointing since there is so much history behind them.
I guess after all, for a city to grow, redeveloping some of the neighborhoods is almost unavoidable. I read that some cities try really hard to preserve the history and culture of neighborhoods, though. They converted rundown factories into community sports centers. It breathes new life into these old structures and is mostly welcomed by residents.
I really like that idea. And to go back to the rent issue, there are some measures in place that protect the current residents, for example, rent control.
There'll be too much pushback from landlords. I think subsidized housing will work better. That really helps residents stay in the same area in the long run.
Yeah, that's right. In any case, to really mitigate the negative impacts of urban renewal, I think careful urban planning is the key. They need to identify the common struggle of residents in order to empower the community.
Great point. I hope they'll hold public forums to collect our opinions. Maybe we should check the city website to see if they have anything like that.
Sounds good. I'll have a look at their website later. We should go if they do.
Absolutely. All right. Shall we go for lunch now?
You now have 2 minutes before you hear the recording for a second and final time.
Hey, Michelle, have you heard? The metro is finally coming here.
Yes, I look forward to it. The public transit needs some serious improvement. I mean, look around us, Jun. The nearest train station we have is a 30-minute walk from here. And to go to downtown, we can only take the bus. But we have to change lines twice. The metro will definitely make things easier. It'd be wonderful if they could bring in some bike paths, too. But that might be wishful thinking.
I'm sure the city is going to revitalize the area. Look at all the big development projects around. And quite a few trendy restaurants and cafes have opened. It's going to look quite different in a few years.
I just hope the cost of living won't go up too much, though. I heard the rent went up by 13% on average in another up-and-coming neighborhood in the city.
I wouldn't mind paying a bit more to live in a nicer area, to be honest.
It works for you because you have a decent job. But lots of neighborhoods that get revitalized are traditionally where low-income communities are, especially minority groups. The rent spike will mean these less privileged groups will have to move.
True, and that's a shame. They are really the soul of the neighborhood and define the vibe here. I'll be sad to see these folks go and lose the cultural diversity here.
Well, you know what? I just read that Fortune Diner on Bank Street is closing down next month.
What? It's such a hangout spot for locals, though. I always grab a quick coffee there in the morning when I'm in a rush.
Yeah, apparently the owner sold the space to a franchise cafe. Speaking of coffee, I think ours is ready. So yes, they are tearing down the diner along with a few other old buildings. Quite disappointing since there is so much history behind them.
I guess after all, for a city to grow, redeveloping some of the neighborhoods is almost unavoidable. I read that some cities try really hard to preserve the history and culture of neighborhoods, though. They converted rundown factories into community sports centers. It breathes new life into these old structures and is mostly welcomed by residents.
I really like that idea. And to go back to the rent issue, there are some measures in place that protect the current residents. For example, rent control.
There'll be too much pushback from landlords. I think subsidized housing will work better. That really helps residents stay in the same area in the long run.
Yeah, that's right. In any case, to really mitigate the negative impacts of urban renewal, I think careful urban planning is the key. They need to identify the common struggle of residents in order to empower the community.
Great point. I hope they'll hold public forums to collect our opinions. Maybe we should check the city website to see if they have anything like that.
Sounds good. I'll have a look at their website later. We should go if they do.
Absolutely. All right. Shall we go for lunch now?
You now have 2 minutes, 30 seconds to finish answering the questions. Text C. You now have 4 minutes to read the questions.
You are going to hear a conversation between a sociology student, Brandon, and his professor, Dr. Wu, discussing the social function of gossip.
Dr. Wu, as a sociologist, what's your take on everyday gossip?
Well, Brandon, gossip is an integral part of our conversation. Most people disapprove of it since they understand it to mean hurtful rumors, but we social scientists define it as talking about people who are not present. And this is how the gossip formula works. Typically, it's prefaced with an observation. Then the gossipers start making subjective comments about the targets, and a conversation develops. Those remarks could be positive or neutral in nature, so there could be positive gossip too.
When you say positive gossip, do you mean like telling your friends about someone's selfish behavior?
Actually, I'd call that negative gossip, because despite its good intention, the content of the gossip, I mean your criticism about how someone behaves, is still negative in nature. An example of positive gossip is when you praise someone who's not present. But in either example, the purpose of the gossip is similar. You tell others who to trust and who to avoid.
Obviously, that premises on the assumption that we're all telling the truth, and with accuracy.
For sure. It's interesting you've brought this up, because there was a famous social experiment on how people reacted to different types of gossip and gossipers. The researchers found that people felt a tremendous need to warn others in private about someone else's selfish behaviors. These well-intentioned warnings, communicated as gossip, were welcomed by the rest of the group.
So you're saying that gossip could make people monitor their own behavior so that they don't get talked about negatively?
I would say gossip tells us what is socially acceptable and what's not. Gossip can be a form of collective criticism. I mean, criticism from the whole group, not just one or two people. This deters people from engaging in activities that are frowned upon in a community.
Could you please send me that research paper? It sounds like an interesting read.
Sure, I'll do that now. So, it'd be unrealistic to expect that gossip can make someone nicer. But it serves as evidence of cultural learning and informs us of social values.
Honestly, I don't think everyday gossip is useful enough for us to understand the norm of a society. I find studying how people use gossip to manage relationships much more meaningful.
As a scholar, I think it is just as important. Indeed, a lot of people share gossip with others in order to build in-groups. For example, by complaining about your professor with your classmates, it shows that you trust them enough to share your personal feelings. A bond is then created.
It's true. It's just like sharing a secret with your friend.
Exactly. And gossip helps develop a relationship too.
But if your relationship thrives on talking about others, it's probably not the healthiest one.
When you share with a friend about another person that you know, you're opening up yourself and, in a way, making your friend part of your life. This kind of conversation facilitates the development of your friendships.
I doubt it. To me, it's boring. When I chat with my friends, I want to hear about them, not the people around them.
In that case, you'll probably also disagree with me that extroverts gossip far more frequently than introverts.
I must say, I have strong reservations about this claim. Anyway, Dr. Wu, thanks so much for your insights.
No problem.
You now have 2 minutes before you hear the recording for a second and final time.
Dr. Wu, as a sociologist, what's your take on everyday gossip?
Well, Brandon, gossip is an integral part of our conversation. Most people disapprove of it since they understand it to mean hurtful rumors. But we social scientists define it as talking about people who are not present. And this is how the gossip formula works. Typically, it's prefaced with an observation. Then the gossipers start making subjective comments about the targets, and a conversation develops. Those remarks could be positive or neutral in nature, so there could be positive gossip too.
When you say positive gossip, do you mean like telling your friends about someone's selfish behavior?
Actually, I'd call that negative gossip, because despite its good intention, the content of the gossip, I mean your criticism about how someone behaves, is still negative in nature. An example of positive gossip is when you praise someone who's not present. But in either example, the purpose of the gossip is similar. You tell others who to trust and who to avoid.
Obviously, that premises on the assumption that we're all telling the truth, and with accuracy.
For sure. It's interesting you've brought this up, because there was a famous social experiment on how people reacted to different types of gossip and gossipers. The researchers found that people felt a tremendous need to warn others in private about someone else's selfish behaviors. These well-intentioned warnings, communicated as gossip, were welcomed by the rest of the group.
So you're saying that gossip could make people monitor their own behavior so that they don't get talked about negatively?
I would say gossip tells us what is socially acceptable and what's not. Gossip can be a form of collective criticism. I mean, criticism from the whole group, not just one or two people. This deters people from engaging in activities that are frowned upon in a community.
Could you please send me that research paper? It sounds like an interesting read.
Sure, I'll do that now. So it'd be unrealistic to expect that gossip can make someone nicer. But it serves as evidence of cultural learning and informs us of social values.
Honestly, I don't think everyday gossip is useful enough for us to understand the norm of a society. I find studying how people use gossip to manage relationships much more meaningful.
As a scholar, I think it is just as important. Indeed, a lot of people share gossip with others in order to build in-groups. For example, by complaining about your professor with your classmates, it shows that you trust them enough to share your personal feelings. A bond is then created.
It's true. It's just like sharing a secret with your friend.
Exactly. And gossip helps develop a relationship too.
But if your relationship thrives on talking about others, it's probably not the healthiest one.
When you share with a friend about another person that you know, you're opening up yourself and, in a way, making your friend part of your life. This kind of conversation facilitates the development of your friendships.
I doubt it. To me, it's boring. When I chat with my friends, I want to hear about them, not the people around them.
In that case, you'll probably also disagree with me that extroverts gossip far more frequently than introverts.
I must say, I have strong reservations about this claim. Anyway, Dr. Wu, thanks so much for your insights.
No problem.
You now have the rest of the time to finish answering the questions.